Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you once again for joining us. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, Dr. Matt Polacek is still taking a little time off, but I am thrilled to have with us as our guest co-host, Christine Baumgartner. And if you're single and frustrated with what's happening in your dating life and ready to find your loving partner, then Christine's coaching is for you. For the past 10 years, Christine has been helping singles turn their dating lives from frustrating to fun and ultimately find their lasting true love. Christine was single for 20 years between her two marriages and has shared that she perfected how to date men she'd never marry, something that we'll ask her a little more about later. Now, when she decided that she wanted to get married, she confirmed she needed to learn how to date differently, which led her to create her Transform Your Dating Life system. Now, during her transition to coaching, she became a top relationship coach for John Gray, the person who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and combined this coaching knowledge with her own personal dating experience to now help hundreds of singles find their last true love. Christine, thanks for joining us. And as far as I'm concerned, I couldn't ask a better co-host for today's subject.
Oh, thank you, Alan, so much. I'm very honored to be here and thrilled to have a chance to interview Catherine. So one of the things that was so wonderful is Catherine sent her book, and I kept reading the book going, oh, yeah, I like that. Oh, I agree with that. Oh, I am so on board with this. And a lot of what Catherine had mentioned was, excuse me, if you first work on yourself, it's very essential in order to find love. And it's how I came up with the tagline for my company. It's called The Perfect Catch, but it's learn how to be one and then how to attract one. So, yeah.
I'm
on board with this call today, this conversation.
And I saw that as so much synergy between the two of you, because in reading the book and as well as learning more about you, everything was still based on worry about fixing you first. And I like that. So for everybody out there, if we've teased you enough, our topic today is tantric dating, bringing love and awareness to the dating process. Now, when most people hear the word tantra, they think of sex, or at least I do. So I went straight to the reviews to see what others were saying about our guest's new book. An international online magazine stated, for those readers, men and women, who wish to enrich their love lives, investigating the author's sage and well-considered advice could be just the answer and path you've been looking for. So then I went looking at the comments to see what readers or fans are saying about the book. And to summarize what I found, said, according to the many fans of tantric dating, the book masterfully teaches a new mindset and shares exercises to help you bring love and awareness to the dating process, which is about facing your fears, growing yourself up, about love and sex, and in the process, experiencing yourself as a fully whole human being. So our guest today is the author of that book, Tantric Dating, Catherine Aumann, whose distinguished career in psychology has included working in nearly all aspects of mental health, private practice, psychiatric hospitals, chemical dependency treatment centers, residential treatment, and consulting nationally with mental health facilities. She was previously the director of behavioral health services at Glendale Memorial Hospital, Redlands Community Hospital, and the Alpha Recovery Center. Catherine taught psychology and counseling at JFK University, University of Phoenix, and the Chicago School for Professional Psychology. Now, receiving her master's in psychology from Antioch University, her license as a marriage and family therapist, as well as becoming a certified NLP practitioner, which I'd like to talk to her more about as well. Now, in 2011, she was elected by her peers to the state board of her professional organization, the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. Catherine has frequently appeared as a mental health expert on the national TV show Extra, and her writings have been published in journals, magazines, and books in the United States, Finland, and Norway. Catherine, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. What a joy to be here.
Well, one of the things we were talking about just prior to going on the air was this is a show that's now been on for about 9 years, and we have talked about a variety of different subjects, so much so that I have friends and people that I meet at the gym and other locations that come up to me and ask what the next subject is or who the next guest is going to be or, you know, what book are you reading now? And I've had the same woman come up multiple times and say, how come you're not helping us, the single people? Why aren't you bringing somebody on? So, Catherine, when we met through LinkedIn, I saw this as a perfect opportunity to get you on and to reach many of the single people out there with some of the things they can do to better their life in that area.
That's a great idea. So happy we're doing that.
So, let's talk about tantric dating. How is it different than how we usually talk about dating?
Well, what I found, and Christine, you and I both learned a lot about dating in the trenches. We were both single and doing online dating and everything we could, and I was trying to figure out what I was doing wrong or why I was meeting the wrong people. I think that's pretty common for single people. And I started thinking that maybe there was actually something wrong with the dating process itself. I think there was something wrong with, there was definitely things about myself that needed to be improved, but there was also something with the dating process. And I noticed that the dating process encourages us to focus on what's wrong with people. People are not good looking enough, or people don't make enough money, or people aren't cool enough for me, or people aren't this, or they aren't that. And usually the experience is that you go home at the end of the date feeling bad because they weren't good enough or I wasn't good enough. And I started noticing that the dating process itself seems to encourage this type of thinking of what's wrong with me and everyone else. And that's why I can't find love. And from some of my spiritual studies, including Tantra, which includes sex but isn't just sex like everyone thinks it is, I started thinking, what if we focused on what's right with everyone? And we started dating with what's lovable about this person? Because in the conventional dating world, everyone we go on a date with is either the perfect romantic fantasy or I'm going to throw them in the garbage can. And there's nothing in between. And then people go home and go, oh, yeah, it was a terrible date, terrible person. And then you hear these words like people describe each other as creeps, and it's just very unloving. So I developed this book as a way to try to turn ourselves into people who date in a loving way, and then by doing this become more loving people, and then guess what? There's love everywhere.
Yes, and what I got a lot from your book, and it's certainly what I teach, is that you first have to love yourself, and that's when you start thinking, well, I'm a loving person, so I'm going to be loving on this date. Because if you're not feeling like a loving person, how could you be loving on the date?
Exactly. And everyone thinks they're a loving person because we all love our families and friends. But actually in dating, we may not particularly be a loving person. So I would practice, and I encourage clients to practice, if I'm sitting with this person and I may notice that I don't know if we'll ever be married or not. I don't have to decide that today, but I can decide to look for how this person and I are similar instead of focusing on what's wrong with them.
Yes.
And then that way I can use the dating process to develop myself as a more loving person and actually see that one reason I don't have love in my life is because I'm not loving enough.
You know, Catherine, one of the things that I got from the book was some of the subjects like that subject about being more loving. I think we can use this in all aspects of our life, and that's one of the things that I thought was so great about the book, that you don't have to be dating. I mean, this is something that, I mean, we're seeing, you know, on a social level of people focusing on everything that can possibly be negative and not trying to look at the very positive things that are out there. So I think you've taken something that we could all use, but you've applied it directly to dating, which is another area that it obviously needs.
Yeah.
Now, I know in the book, what do you mean when you say that the society is now against love?
This was pointed out to be one of my teachers, Peter Ringel, who said that in a consumer society, you think how much money is pumped into the dating industry. So you have to pay for dates, and men are supposed to prove how much money they make by taking women on expensive dates, and people have to buy dating clothes, and there are certain restaurants and bars that position themselves as specialties in dating, and then there's dating services, and then there's dating events. I know how much do these speed dating events go for now, Christine? They're $45-$50.
Yes.
Anyway, there's a lot of money in dating. I know when I was dating, I drank more cocktails than I usually drink meeting men and so on. So there's a whole industry. And also, what he pointed out to me is that if people are happy and in love, couples that have been together for a long time, they kind of like to just stay home and be together, and they're kind of satisfied with that. So if people are anxious and single and unhappy and outspending money, then there's a certain benefit to that that kind of keeps people agitated and spending money.
And I find that it drives the anxiety even more. It increases the anxiety even more. Well, I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing it the way that it's supposed to. So one of the things that I was intrigued with your book was the exercise that you did at the ashram so that you could see past the outer parts of people. I thought that would be helpful to hear how you did that and then how we could use it in the real world. If you're just meeting people, you're not blindfolded.
We did an exercise where we were blindfolded. We all kind of knew each other by this point, so it wasn't with complete strangers. So the environment felt very safe. And we were blindfolded, and we kind of mingled and kind of reached out and touched each other's arm or whatever would happen and just feel the energy of the person without being able to see. So I have another exercise in my book that I developed out of this, which is to go to Starbucks and look at people in a different way, because we have been taught to be so prejudiced against people for the way they look in a way which is really unhealthy, and we don't even question that. Most listeners to this show are really working on themselves to not be prejudiced against people with skin color, or a lot of us have become very aware that we don't want to be prejudiced against people with different body sizes, we don't want to be prejudiced against disabled people and so on. But in the dating world, somehow it's okay to be very prejudiced against people for the way they appear to our eyes. So we're taught that the only people worth falling in love with should look like movie stars. And as the closer a person looks like a movie star, the more worthy they are of love. And I was lucky enough to be in contexts where that struck me suddenly as crazy.
Yeah.
Only people who look like movie stars are worthy of love, yet this message is pitched to us incessantly. And so I recommend that people challenge that idea, and actually I recommend they go to Starbucks and try to look for really positive qualities in people who don't look like movie stars, and actually see what are the qualities that, even if I'm not going to be with them, how would that person be a good mate?
It's such good practice. I tell people, go practice, especially with people you're not attracted to, which lends us into the chemistry question. Everybody's, I want chemistry, I want connection. If I don't feel it in the first 5 seconds, I can't even imagine going out with them a second time. I why would they even say hello to me? I'm not feeling a connection with them. And how false of a foundation that is to build your relationship on the beginning. It's so inaccurate.
Absolutely. I looked a lot into this question because I noticed when I was online dating, as you were, that was kind of the number one thing people were looking for, chemistry. And I thought, I think I probably used to say that too. But I really looked into what people mean by chemistry. I think, number one, they mean this person is the closest to Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie that I've been yet to, able to meet. That feels like chemistry. Or number two, it may be a sign of unfinished baggage that each person is carrying. And the example I like to give of this is something that we've all heard of, which is some woman may have been unfortunately beaten up by her father in childhood and learned the lesson that love equals getting beat up. And this doesn't make sense to the conscious mind, but it's somehow in the emotional body of the person. And when she grows up, she gets involved with a guy who beats her, and we're all going, that's crazy, it doesn't make any sense. But she's been programmed that love equals being hurt.
And then the chemistry part is often for women, the thing I hear from women a lot is, you know, I'm not attracted to him at all, and he's really attracted to me, and the one I'm really attracted to isn't attracted to me. Because often for women, when we have a lot of chemistry, we stop acting like ourselves. They wouldn't like us to say that, or they wouldn't like me to act like that or be like that. And we stop being our authentic selves. We stop being that loving person. And then the man that could be a really good match for us isn't attracted because we're getting all caught up in the chemistry, which could certainly be the bad messages we got and became beliefs as adults, or just the stuff that we've made up in our heads about how they have to look.
I totally agree. And also, I wonder if that woman got some kind of messages in childhood that if you love somebody, they're not going to love you back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really
important. Or I'm only attracted to someone I can't have. This one I notice a lot because there's this longing in movies and songs that I'm longing for someone I can't have. And if we're going to say yes to love, we need to say yes to love in this moment, not in a fantasy future.
Yes, absolutely.
So a lot of my book is about noticing the love that's already present. Single people are always looking for the love. Single people are looking out and seeing where love isn't. And part of my book's message is, love is here in the present. Focus on that. That helps you become a loving person.
That's really correct.
Now, what are some of the things that people can do? So let's take, for instance, the woman that you mentioned that maybe because she was beaten, you know, as a child, that then thinks that that is somehow associated with love. What can that person do to get out of that, in some cases, sort of a continuing process to where they seem to repeat the same thing? How can they, through therapy or whatever, get out of that to where they can find real love that has nothing to do with anything other than just being loving?
Well, I'm a big proponent of psychotherapy. I've been in psychotherapy a lot myself, and some of these deeper rooted issues can take, sometimes it's worth it to dedicate yourself to some long-term work and really root out those old programs and really make some differences. And then again, it's good to get some coaching so that when you're dating and you can really check with someone, not a friend, because your friends are your friends because they're going to tell you what you want to hear, but a coach or a therapist can help you say, are you choosing again someone who actually doesn't love you? You know, let's go for someone who loves you. Let's live in love.
And one of the things I hear all the time is, I'll say, so who are you taking dating advice from? And it's from their single friends.
Exactly.
So, well, they're really good at staying single, and you should do things with them. But if you're not going to talk to a professional, then at least find someone who's in a happy, healthy, at least 10-year relationship and ask them how it's working and what do they do.
I totally agree with that, Christine. That's a great point. If I could gather all the advice I took from single friends, the bad advice, I wouldn't have been single for so long.
Yeah, I'm smiling because, and I don't know if my sister's listening or not, but many years ago when I was younger, she had said, I'm taking away your picker.
Exactly.
She said, I'm not letting you pick anymore.
Exactly.
So anybody that you want to see, you need to bring them over to
exactly.
us and let us have some input. Which, I mean, if you think about it, I think it really does make sense just from the standpoint of, if you have people that you love and that you trust, why not have them have some input into that decision, at least from the standpoint of, you know, if they know that you have a tendency to make certain decisions that might not be in your own best interest.
I totally agree. There's a lot to be said for the well, I might get in trouble for this one, but there's a lot to be said for the olden days when your family and friends would pick someone for you. Unfortunately, you were stuck with them for life, no matter what they were like. But I think that idea that your loved one wants to, you want them to fit in with your friends and family, that's yeah. a good criteria right there.
Oh, yeah. And that's to vet them. Criteria. How did they vet them?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm smiling. I was just a few months ago, I was in India, and so I was speaking with a friend of mine there, a local, and he asked me about someone he had met that I had brought with me a couple years back, and I said, well, you know, we're no longer together. He said, oh my God, you're single? He said, let me introduce you to a professional chooser, I guess,
uh-huh.
in India. You know, he said, this woman is great. She does, you know, but it was in his culture, that's exactly what the thing is that you're not going to be allowed to make this decision, but I can connect you with somebody whose job is to make this decision
for you.
Someone
who's really good for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you probably won't choose the one who's right for you if you've been single a long time. So.
Yes, and you've got a history and a pattern of not choosing well.
Having a poor picker, as Alan said.
Yes, I love that. And then also, not only are you not picking, when you're picking the wrong people, and you're not picking the right people for you.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the other part that I was fascinated with your book, is how we send love away all the time. All the time. It's right there. I tell people the right person is, when you talk about how many people there are in L.A. and we can't find anybody, there's nobody. Where are the men? Where are the nice single men? They're everywhere.
Yes, they're everywhere. I had this realization that there's 10 million people in Los Angeles, 20 million people in Southern California. But I hear this all the time. There isn't anyone here. There's no one for me. And all that means is that person is looking out and not seeing how much love there is. So my premise of my book is that there's love everywhere. If you're single and you don't want to be, you're not seeing the love that's there.
Now, when we talk about that, and we would all like to be very good and be looking for the love, and I think some of us do it better than others, but one of the things that you mention in your book, that you don't like the word rejection, so one question is, why don't you like it? But also, is that another reason why people are so unable to spot the love, because there's that fear of rejection?
Absolutely. We have to be careful of the words we use, because, you know, if we wake up in the morning grumpy and say this is going to be a terrible day, then usually that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And in the world of dating, a lot of people are afraid to date because they don't want to be rejected. They don't want to reject other people. But it really occurred to me that when we're in our non-dating lives, if we go to a business mixer and we meet people and we connect with some and we don't connect with others, and we actually might connect with someone at a business meeting and we might exchange phone numbers and then we never see that person again, we don't call that rejection and we don't find that painful.
But get your heart involved, oh my.
But why do we find that painful when we're just out meeting a bunch of people that we may want to date? We've decided that that is an insult or a painful, and it doesn't have to be. It could be very fun and interesting to meet people. I got later in my dating career, so it was actually fun to go out and just meet people and find out what they're about.
That's what I found too. When I changed my perspective of this is going to be fun. I'm going to meet somebody interesting. I'm going to hear about the things in their life. I might not want to go out with them a second time, but I'm going to find out about them. And it made dating fun.
Exactly. And then if he doesn't want to see me again, that's okay.
Yes.
There's plenty of other guys to meet. And I'm not overly invested because it's just an interesting meeting with another person, just like at a networking meeting, a meetup. You know, you meet interesting people all the time. It doesn't break my heart or their heart that we don't see each other again. It's a big world. There's a lot of attractive, available people.
And you don't go into it thinking, I'm meeting my husband or my wife.
Or because he looks like Brad Pitt, this is the one I want. You yeah. don't even know him well enough to no. know if that's what you want.
I think that's a great point, is to try and get into situations to where you can have discussions that are a little bit deeper than, you know, than what somebody looks like or what type of clothes they wear or something that's very superficial is, you know, and I think you had mentioned, again, before we went on the air, of doing things that you like, that they like also, so that you already have something that is there. There's something to talk about besides, you know, the weather or the politics or whatever. So I like that part. Find something that you like together that allows you to go deeper into some subject where we can learn more about the real person and not just the superficial.
Absolutely. I mean, I enjoyed coffee dates, but I actually met my partner at a meetup.com, which is a good place where you can have lots of activities where you can, you know, dating coaches I know are always saying, I don't know if you agree with this, Christine, but when I'd read dating books before, they always say, go places where men would be, and I'd be like, well, I don't like car shows. I don't really know what that means, but when I started joining meetup.com and went to hiking clubs and massage classes and discussion groups, there were lots of people, and you could just meet them in an organic way.
Yes, and it is one of the things I suggest is to figure out what you're interested in, and I suggest meetup.com a lot. You put in your zip code, you put in your interests. As you said, you will have invitations in your email every day. And then when you're there, you're not just looking for the opposite sex. You're looking for friends. Because if you have friends, they'll tell you about other things. Well, gosh, you're into hiking or you have a book club. Mm-hmm. What else are you doing? And then you go join something else that you have an interest in. It will help you feeling more loving. It'll get you more passion in your life because you're doing the things you like. And then you already know that the people there like the same thing that you do. And then you're be more apt to feel more open to not looking just at their looks. You're just looking to see, well, gosh, am I walking at the same pace as them at this hike? Or, wow, that was a really interesting question that person asked, and I wouldn't have looked at them a second time, but that was a really interesting question. I might want to talk to them after this meetup. And that's how you get past the looks part, too.
And becoming more open to people of all types, mm-hmm. you become a more loving person, and then you attract more loving people. It's kind of sort of a metaphysical kind of thing, I guess. But you're also just more open to people, and then your beloved is more likely to show up because they're attracted magnetically to that loving, open person that you have worked on yourself to become.
And I like that you talked about how do you learn more about yourself? That was what I decided on every time I was meeting new people, whether it was at a meetup or a coffee date. What am I learning about me? Where was that place inside of me that felt tight? Where was that place inside of me that didn't feel loving and it felt judgmental? And I work on that because they were the perfect person to show that to me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't them. It wasn't that I was broken. It was just this place that needed a little more opening, a little more
yes.
work. So you have great information about that in your book.
Oh, thank you so much. You're I really
welcome.
Think you can use dating to work on yourself, become a more loving person. It doesn't have to be this terrible shutdown, oh, everyone's so awful, I can't find anyone. It's like, wow, I'm finding so many people. I'm sure there's so much love in life that I'm sure my special person is on their way.
Well, the book is called Tantric Dating, Bringing Love and Awareness to the Dating Process. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. The topic is tantric dating. But essentially, it's more of just dating in general. I mean, what are some of the things that we can do from the standpoint of being more loving? And which brings us to a question. So for Catherine, in your book, you include a fascinating section on the invention of romantic love. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Alan, this was a book I read in college, which has stuck with me. It was called Love in the Western World. And you'll have to excuse my pronunciation. I don't speak French, but it was something like Denis de Rougemont. And the book said that romantic love was invented by the troubadours in the 1200s. And I vaguely remember those troubadours with the little guys with the puff pants and the lutes and the hats and so on. And they would sing these songs to their lady love. And the songs were loving this woman. I picture those women with the pointed hats and the long streamers coming out of them. Anyway, this woman would be in the castle, and they'd be singing up to her, and she was on a pedestal, and it was courtly love. And you could never have this woman. It was a sexist day and age, so I think it was just the men singing to this woman you could never have, and this longing. And according to the author of that book, romantic love in that sort had never existed before that, in that form. I thought that was fascinating. I thought it had always been there. And so you see, this starts the beginning of this idea that love is something we can't have, and that the beloved is someone who's on a pedestal above us. And I think you'll agree, Christine, this makes a lot of trouble actually finding someone, because you'd rather long for this perfect thing than actually look across the table and go, yeah, there's a guy just like me who's got some baggage, perfectly great person, he's a wonderful person, but he's not up on this pedestal. What was really interesting to me, in addition to the fact that this had never existed before, was that these troubadours were a religious sect called the Cathars, and they were actually singing to God. But they weren't doing this within what the church thought was okay, so they were pretending it was about a woman, so it was longing for this kind of love that doesn't even exist on earth. So I think this is still tripping us up in our love lives today, that we're craving something that doesn't exist on earth, that can be only found through spiritual life, and trying to get another flawed human being just like ourselves to fit the bill, and people are disappointed that that's not happening. It was never meant to happen.
Yes, it's the unattainable love. It's very debilitating.
It's debilitating. Mm-hmm.
And it's what I hear a lot. And we don't recognize it when it's happening to us, but when I hear the words, when people are saying how lonely they are and they can't meet anybody and everybody's wrong for them, then I think, well, is that part of the attraction? Is that part of... it's keeping you safe. It's keeping you not loving somebody because you've been hurt too many times and you don't want to get hurt again and you don't know how to not get hurt again. So I have a drawing that I had done that it's a castle and there's a moat and it's filled with alligators and there's people on top of the turrets with hot oil, and the grounds are surrounded with men with big spears, and they want a knight in shining armor to come riding in. I go, oh, they're going to take one look and go, yeah, no. That's even too much for me. And so when you step back and look at people regularly and make yourself more loving, create a more loving atmosphere, you don't need all those guards. But part of what I found fascinating when you were talking about instincts and thinking about your instincts and how our instincts aren't enough, and I'm a big proponent of listening to your instincts, so I'd love you to talk a little bit more about that.
I think our instincts are, do you mean like our intuition about a person?
Well, our real knowing.
Real knowing.
Because, you know, you go down the road and you look back and you go, oh, yeah, there was that little voice. And
yeah, I knew that guy wasn't that great, but I thought he
was so cute. But he was so cute. And he took me out to dinner, and he had beautiful eyes, and I didn't have a date for that weekend anyway. So that real core, that you can get to that core place that really knows that if you listened, but we don't listen.
We don't mm-mm. listen to that. We, again, this is that longing for this idealized person, and so we fall in love with someone who looks like they might give us that ideal fantasy, and that's why I'm saying we also need to use the, is it the left side of our brain, the logical side that says, yeah, but he doesn't have a job. Yeah, but he drinks an awful lot.
None of my friends like him.
None of my friends like him. So I think it's definitely, I agree with you, we need to listen to that voice that knows that we're not listening to, but we also need to use all of ourselves to make a good decision. It's, you know, there's a big difference between when, I know we talked about this a little before, Christine, that when you actually make a decision that you're going to date now to get married or to find someone, there's a change to let go of that longing for a fantasy person and actually accept love into your life. And that's why I say start practicing getting more love in your life so you feel comfortable with that.
Yes, it's like a muscle at the gym.
Yes,
you need
exactly.
to work it over and over and over. So look for all the people around you. I don't care if they're your type or they're available. Just look at them in a more loving way and think of yourself in a more loving way. Because then when a person who's possibly somebody that you'd like to go out with or a second time, you've already practiced that muscle.
Exactly.
It's really important.
Yeah. Now, I've got a question for Christine, and then, Catherine, I'd like your comment on her answer. Christine, we talked a little bit about you went through a period of time in which you dated knowing that it was not somebody that you wanted to marry. Okay, so how does that work from the standpoint of judging where the other person is at that time?
Well, I'm the perfect person that did it all wrong, which
is... I'm not saying it's wrong.
I did it so wrong. I said I was my first client because I learned to be a coach by looking for a husband. So I was single for 20 years between my divorce and my remarriage to my deceased husband. And I kept... My friends would say, well, what do you think of the men that you're dating? And I'd go out with them a few times. I mean, sometimes like months. And I'd say, oh, you know, they're really nice, but I'd never marry them. But I didn't want to get married then, so that was perfectly fine with me. But then when I turned 50, I said, you know, I think I'd like to get married. And my friends would ask me, well, what do you think of the guys that you're dating now? And it was when online dating, so I had even more dates. And I was continuing to say, gosh, they're really nice, interesting men, and I would never marry them. And I finally listened, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. So what was the reason? And part of it was the judgment, but part of it was to keep me safe because I was attracting and being attracted to men sitting across the table from me that made money and had no money and were in major debt. And I always enjoyed the dates. They told me all the wonderful things they did that they spent all this money on, but I knew that that was not a safe thing for me because I, at that point, had an event planning company, had money in the bank, a retirement. That wasn't going to work for me. So I started saying, well, what about me is attracting them? And it was some really old beliefs that it was my father and my ex-husband, because that's who men were in my life. But as much as I could write in a profile I wanted somebody financially stable, I could tell my friends I wanted somebody financially stable, who I believed I deserved, who I knew I could handle, who I thought that's all there were out there, were very always sitting across the table from me. So when I really worked on that belief, which was definitely therapy, the next man that showed up made money and had money. And I could stop being afraid of that. I could let that go and know, oh, okay, I now can be very open to that person because they don't have that. But, well, let's see what else thing I'm attracting that doesn't fit me. And as I worked on that, the men would show up that didn't have that trait either. So my very favorite lovely Tony story is he invited me to go on a cruise about 5 months after we met, and it was with he and his stepdaughter, my stepdaughter, and a girlfriend of hers. And on the cruise, he gave me two gifts that I didn't ask for, and one was diamond stud earrings, and the other was his credit report. I know, and I said, wow.
That's intimate.
That's really amazing. Why did you give me that? And he said, well, I read in your profile that you said you wanted somebody financially stable and that you are, and I'm falling in love with you, and I wanted to see you to see that that's who I am. And I said, wow, I think that's okay inside of me now. What do you think? And as I kept doing that, and then my girlfriends would say, well, why are you meeting people that you think you would marry? I said, well, go try this. I don't know if it'll work for everybody, but it worked for me. And it started working for them. And they started meeting men that were more connected for them and interesting for them and more of a match. And then when I married my husband, that's how I started my company, because I said, I have to tell more people this. It's so important. So that's how I
changed. So going inside, seeing where you're stuck,
mm-hmm.
being fearless to, well, it's a little scary, but being willing to see what that is and then getting some help and change that pattern.
Mm-hmm. And oh my.
Because like we were talking about earlier, you might have felt that was chemistry when some guy was sort of, I'm so attracted to this guy, but another one without money. So we have to unhook those chemistries that aren't working for us and use both sides of our brain and become willing to be loved rather than long for something that doesn't exist.
Well, and I'm a perfect example of your book because he was so not my type outside.
Well, you know,
I wouldn't have noticed him in a room full of men.
Exactly. So I think this is another concept we might kind of want to throw out the window is my type. Because do we have my types for friends? Hopefully, we've all found by this time of life that it's very enriching to have all different types of friends, all different ages, all different mm-hmm. professions, all different ethnicities. It's just so enriching. So when I hear this, my type in dating, people would ask me, what's your type? I go, someone kind.
That's what I say. Oh, I think I've gotten it. It's nice. It's funny. Because it became not important how they looked.
Well, yeah. And that's very superficial.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
superficial.
Yeah, your book's so helpful.
Thank you.
And we have a listener question that may be going through some of their own things. But this one says, I received the weekly press release, and I am so looking forward to this interview, as I am one of those 50-plus individuals who has pretty much given up on dating. Now, not unlike many of my other female friends, I have had one disaster after another with men my age who put on one face, and then when I meet them, I only see them change into a much less desirable companion a few months later, becoming dominating or in need of a mother. Now, I know this sounds judgmental, which we were just talking about, but are women my age who are independent and not needy setting the bar too high, or are we approaching dating incorrectly? I would like to hear your honest opinion, and this is from Gloria in Florida.
Number one, Gloria, Christina and I are both over 50, independent, and had a lot of dating disasters, so keep going, girl.
Yes.
What I hear in your question is perhaps that you're doing something I used to do, which is have meet someone, have very high expectations. This is the one. We all know the first 3 months are the honeymoon, and we get on a high. And then when the other shoe drops, become very disappointed. This is a common pattern. And we have to, I think by dating a lot and having a lot of dating disasters, we recognize this pattern. And I think with your wisdom now, you could maybe expect that. It's not so much disappointment as it is my expectations were too high. So the degree of disappointment, I think, equals how too high our expectations were. All men are going to come with baggage. We all come with baggage. So to expect to find someone without baggage is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's really correct.
Yeah, and I think, Christine, you could add to that from the standpoint of, you know, there's probably acceptable baggage and unacceptable baggage, you know?
Yes, and it's not only just, that's a really good point. And, like, when men would come, when they'd go, I'd go up 4 or 5 times, I'd let them come pick me up at my house, and I had white carpet and a white couch. That's how I live. I have really modern furniture.
You're very brave, Christine.
I know. And they'd walk in the door, and a majority of them would stop and look around and go, wow, this is really neat and clean. And they were not comfortable with it. So that was not a place for us to have a meeting. We would have an interesting conversation at dinner, but I wasn't going to change how I lived. So my deceased husband comes to my house after we've gone out 5 times. In Germany, they take off their shoes always. He walked in and went, oh, it's so neat and clean in here. So when you get yourself into a place where your baggage is manageable, and the way I use it is if it would fit in a bin in an overhead in an airplane, and then you start unpacking as you meet each other and say, oh, I like that about them, or that's an interesting thing, or that's just a quirky thing, or no, I can't. That can't be part of my life. And I'm still enjoying going out with them, but it's not something that is a core thing that's a match for us. So it doesn't make them a bad person, and it doesn't make you a bad person. It's just if you've gotten it down, you can now have a conversation with yourself and even with them about it.
Absolutely. I think everyone ought to make a list of complete deal breakers, such as, you know, beats his dog, is an alcoholic, doesn't work, something like this, extreme examples. And I think that's fine. These are people that you may not want to be friends with either. So I think a list of people that you wouldn't necessarily be friends with is good to have. But other than that, people are going to have their wounds, places they've been hurt, places they're insecure. You know, it's kind of funny in this society because men are never supposed to be insecure. Well, how beautiful that they are, just like us. So we can learn to accept people's baggage as we learn to accept our own.
And one of the interesting things you talked about is setting boundaries, because it is so important, but they are different boundaries than the general population has been doing in their dating, where they're like, oh, he's not cute enough. Oh, he's not, I don't have enough chemistry. And so to talk about how do I say, well, that wouldn't be a good friend, or that would be a friend but not a love interest, and then where do you hone your left brain so that you're not going to let somebody toxic in your life?
Yeah, you know,
well, I think that when we're more open, we can enjoy being with the person in that moment, and we don't have to be making all these decisions right away. If mm-hmm. If there's something obviously toxic, obviously a deal breaker in that moment, like he's rude to the waiter when you're getting coffee, then that's a person I wouldn't ever want to be friends with. So I can make that decision in that moment. But if this is a decent person, I can sit back, enjoy, and not have to make a decision. One of my coaches said to me, all you need to know on a first date is, do you want to see this person again? You don't know if you want to know if you have, want to marry them, have their babies, invest money. All you need to know is, was this pleasant enough to see them again? And I think that's a great, great mm-hmm. boundary.
Yes, it's yeah. one of the ones I tell all the time. And I bet it was so important because you cover it in your book that that's one of the things that women will say, well, I don't know how to see if they're toxic, and so I don't go out with them at all. And it stops them from having a chance to practice saying, oh, that really isn't the right person for me.
It's good to practice just going out and meeting people. Mm-hmm. And some of my clients will say, isn't that using people? I'm like, how could that be? If you go with an attitude of using people, yes. But if you go with the attitude of just, I'm just want to practice becoming more social and meeting more people, this can be very enjoyable for everyone.
And making friends. And that's, you know, that's, I think, one of the greatest takeaways is the fact that, you know, do you want to be friends with this person?
Yes.
You know, and you can't necessarily control what everybody else's expectations are. You can only control your own. Now, we actually only have about a minute and a half. And so in the last part of your book, you include some exercises that people can do. They can practice becoming more loving. Can you share a couple of those with
us? I'd love to. One of them is, as I mentioned earlier, going to Starbucks. sitting down and looking at people not with the eyes of what's wrong with them, which is what we're taught to do, but look for, just exercise your ability to look for what's right with everyone. That person looks like he probably picks up his kids and takes them to a little league. That woman looks like she's had a hard day and could use a cup of coffee. Another one is just practicing always noticing where love is. So in this room right now, there's three of us. There's a lot of love here. Where are you listening to this show? Is there other people there? Is there someone walking down the street? Love is everywhere. We just are the ones not seeing it.
All right. Well, we are just about out of time. So for anybody out there, if you would like to get a hold of Catherine, you can go to her website. It is CatherineAmon.com. If you're driving, you can't write this down, go to the Answers for the Family website. We will have it there, and you can connect that way. Christine, what is the best way for them to be able to get a hold of you?
My website is www.theperfectcatch.com, and I do offer a complimentary coaching call with me. There's a banner at the top, What's Holding You Back from Love. Click on that and schedule a time with me.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, please be sure and put on your calendar to tune in next Monday when our guest will be Rocky Rosen, founder of The Cigarette Whisperer. And I just want everybody to know that a little tip is it's not just about smoking. So, and if you get the opportunity, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Vimeo. If you like what you see, please leave a review. It'll be greatly appreciated. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check it out. And if you like the post, please like them and continue to spread the word of what we have here at Answers for the Family. Catherine, Christine, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Alan and Christine.
It was so fun meeting both of you.
You as well.
All right. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Oh, that was fun.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.